Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Everybody, and welcome to the Schmodown Rundown, the official after show of the Movie Trivia Schmodown. My name is Brad Gilmore, but you might know me by another name. You might know me as... Hello.
Oh my God, you're my dreamboat, for sure.
You're a swagger, Brad.
She has shortened it.
You did. You did. I noticed. I was like, oh boy, here we go. But then, we didn't. Look, here we go. We just stopped.
I'm about... Here on the Rundown, the boat's about quick satisfaction.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
is that a callback from last week?
Hi-o
Silver.
And joining me as always, Frankie Number Jam.
Really?
I don't have it, the regular board back yet.
I'll send you the file.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't be in agony.
Yeah, well, we certainly, you know, we need that.
And because she's not here, she's still in London town. We are going to give a shout out and pour some out for our homie, Steph Sabraw.
Let's get classy.
It would be funny if kind of co-opted that and then changed the word classy to let's get runny. Just. Because, I mean, like, classy's for the FCL, but it's still a great soundbite, but, like,
great
sound. Not rundown-esque, you know. It's repurposed, which is great, but, you know?
It has a purpose.
Yeah.
Its purpose is stating Sabraw's presence on this show.
That's true.
Getting classy. She brings the class.
Our brand is classy, yeah.
You bring the brains. I bring everything else.
Which is what?
Whatever's needed.
Whatever's needed. A soundboard.
I'm like water, man. I'll take whatever shape we need.
All right. Okay. I Ching, all that, you know.
Boat.
Water. That's it.
Makes sense.
All right.
We're talking about Friday Night Titans, the Movie Trivia Schmodown's premiere show that takes place every Friday. If you're not aware of that, this has been a new format this season. I know a lot of people still, I think they're playing catch up, which is weird. We're like several weeks into this and people are still playing catch up, you know, trying to get used to the schedule.
Yeah.
I see comments.
I mean, all you need to know is Friday night at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. And yeah. And then everywhere.
So really for y'all on the West Coast, it's like Friday afternoon.
It's a Friday evening.
Late Friday afternoon Titans.
Yeah. Friday evening Titans. Yeah. East Coast, definitely Friday night. Central, yeah. Friday night.
Central, like, we're dinner time.
Yeah. Right? Six, Friday six. Night dinner time.
Yeah, I mean, really.
Dinner though, with the Titans really on though, Friday.
At the time that Titans starts for y'all on the West Coast,
mm-hmm.
You know, if you're leaving your office and you got to hit, you know, the 101 or the 405.
Sure.
Right? I mean.
You know the numbers. Wow.
It's going to be the
very
whole
good. You know your numbers.
I have a friend named Ashley Amani. She's a dope singer. She actually just did a thing with Usher on his tour. But she has a great song that's like, it's time to hit the 101. Hey, so we can get that 101.
Hey.
It's really dope. You should check it out. Check it out. Ashley Imani on Instagram. Shout out.
Link it.
But we are here to talk about Friday Night Titans. We had really, as far as what the idea of this show is supposed to be, kind of a wrestling feel, championship movie trivia, this has been the most wrestling feel show so far, in my opinion.
Oh, 100%, because the start of the episode is quite a journey to get to at least the match. It's a great journey. We have, Nick Harley and Jacoby. We have Hannah, Coy, and Jesse, which sets up the undercard match. Even when we get into the match, we have more preamble, if you will. So there's a lot of building. And also, really key to this episode was the Previously On, I think, which was great because...
Because we were in it?
Well, not only that, which is always great. It's always great, see our mugs up there. It really did actually kind of set you up a little bit for the Brandon, the Jesse, more of the Jesse, Corky Merc dynamic that would come into play because Coy went in favor of Brandon rather than bringing back Jesse, and there was some beef there. And so you kind of saw a little bit of that set up in the Previously On, which is, I think, has been... It might honestly be one of my more favorite additions to the Schmodown. Having the Previously On, I think I talked about this last week or even the week before.
Great.
Yeah, and it just really lets you, it just sets you up for the episode because more often than not, we walk into Friday Night Titans, at least for the undercard, not knowing what to expect, especially this week, not really knowing what to expect at all from the undercard or the main event. And I think it's pretty important that the Previously On really sets you up, tees you up for what to possibly expect, it sets the table really nicely.
Sets the table beautifully, some might say. They might say beautifully.
They might say that.
Some have said that.
That's what I'm hearing. Other people have been saying this, yeah.
Nick and Jacoby kick us off after the Previously On, of course. We're seeing their dynamic. Jacoby is not a fan of the way Roxy is conducting herself. So he apparently approaches Nick Harley in a kitchen somewhere. And Nick Harley had AirPods on. And the thing that I love the most is that we could actually hear the music that he was listening.
Right. That was, I love when that happens, when it's just like they share their music with us. I always have that fear where like when I would be on the bus or public transportation, have my music blaring. And I feel like it's so loud that the person next to me must hear me. And what if I'm listening to some like Celine Dion or some Cher or, some Reba McEntire, you get to throw a little Dolly Parton in there, it's like, I want to get a, vibe out, And
you're
then
a
like
fan of older white women.
Yeah. I don't know why. I mean there's
plenty of other women you're a fan of. I know, but you just mentioned older white women.
So it was interesting that we could hear what he was listening to. I liked it. Yeah,
Jacoby approaches him and is like, hey man, I'm not liking how Roxy's doing this stuff. And Nick's like, yeah, me neither, man. We need to talk to her. And Jacoby, they both seem very upset. Jacoby, though, initiated this this conversation with the first ever FCL champion. Slick Nick Harley, of course, and the spoiler, as he was known in the FCL realm.
Is he the spoiler again now? Because, like...
Of what happens at the end?
Well, I mean, yeah, I feel like he reverts back to that...
The spoiler.
Yeah, right?
We'll get there, because that's a really interesting point. And then, of course, you talked about Hannah, Coy, and Jesse.
This was... awkward.
Hella awkward. Okay. Is Brandon Hannah, is he fronting? Like, you remember, that's an old school term, fronting.
Yeah.
Is he fronting? What do people think so. Now? Is this all cap?
I think he's seen the light. I think he has seen the joy from Coy. I think he's.
Coy is joy.
Yeah. It's Joy Coy. Coy Joy. Coy Joy.
Not to be confused with Joe Coy, the comedian.
Wasn't even thinking about that, but for others that might be good to know.
But Coy is very infectious with his personality and his optimism. He's an eternal optimist.
Yes.
you know.
Look what he did with DeMolanta last season, you know. Turn that frown upside down. Yes. Got him a title, you know.
Yes. And so I think that Coy Jandrew is having effect on Brandon Hanna. I'm still wondering if Brandon Hanna is like, it's like a fake it till you make it thing. You know what I mean? Like, is it a veneer of optimism so that he becomes optimistic?
There was something a little revealing, I think, in the post-match. This is jumping ahead a little, obviously, to the end of the match, but doesn't have any bearing on the match. But he did say that his girlfriend, Sabrina Ramirez, would be like, hey, be nice. And then he's like, I'm nice. So maybe there's still the hitman in there. There's still the hitman in there. But the forces of Coy and the rest of the quirky mercs, I think, are suppressing the hitman to bring out the Hornet. And how long will that last? I don't know. Maybe it's permanent. Maybe it's not. But if someone, you know, to his left or his right is like, hey, we're good now. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's right. Sometimes nature versus nurture, Brad. What's going on here?
It reminds me of that movie that's coming out. I think, is it called The Bad Guys? Is that what it's called? The animated movie?
I don't.
It's like the big bad wolf, and he wants to be good, though.
I don't know. I don't know if I've seen this trailer seen anything about this. Is there a trailer?
Yes. It's played in literally every movie I've gone to see.
Wow. I have not seen this. Or maybe I wasn't paying attention, or maybe I just got there late. I don't know.
Probably. Yeah. But I wonder if that's kind of this. It's like he's really evil in his heart, but he wants to be good, so he's trying his best.
Yeah, but you know what? I think at the same time, it really does suit him, I think. I mean, now that I'm thinking about it out loud here with you, kind of reminds me of, remember when Andrew Guy was getting trained by Mark Ellis, and he's like turning like this new leaf over, where he's kind of just more subdued and like respectful and more straight edge.
Yeah.
I don't.
It's just the vibe.
What if Coy is like happily brainwashing Brandon Hanna to be good or something? I don't know.
It's a possibility.
Because he's a little. The turn from Hitman to Hornet is so drastic. Like it happened, but it's like such a 180. There's no in between. It's just. Golly gee, go lucky Hanna right now. And I don't know, maybe that's just the power of Coy.
Or maybe it's just the power of the dog.
Did you see that movie?
No.
Okay. Okay. Then let me tell you, it's not.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I have no idea what the movie's about.
It's not.
I have no idea what the movie's about.
Yeah.
Let's get into the inner geekdom match. Of course, we got to see a familiar face on the desk. Rachel the Crusher Cushing is back, but not back in the way that you think that she would be back. She's back on the desk.
Yeah.
Talking about the inner geekdom. You said Hall of Famer. Is that what you just said?
Hall of Famer, legend, icon. I mean, anything else you want to put out there?
What do I have for her?
What do you got? What do you got?
What do I have?
What do you got?
Oh.
I like it.
Not bad. It's a lot better than this.
It's true. That's more like Jesse Swift when he entered that scene.
Yeah, it totally is. Like,
all right, hi, Coy.
Hey, Coy.
Coy. All right, you quirky jerks. I'll see you on the arena.
Yo, Jesse Swift is like War Shack.
Yeah. But he was good. I was like, dang, Jesse. Jesse really was hurt. He's really. And I mean, like, yeah. And so, yeah, he challenges Brandon right there. And that's, we didn't even talk about that part, but he challenges Brandon right there. And they're like, yeah, let's do this.
So that's how Friday Night Titans goes. You never know what's going to happen. So we're about to get to the match, right? The inner geek, the match. But we have a bit of a surprise on the way there, right? I mean, Ben Bateman makes his presence known.
Of course
he does. And wants to start the season off right, and he makes a challenge to Rick the Ray Jaredith, baby.
I need to look up who Ben has played, because I was like, I meant to look this up before the show, and I forgot.
Well, I'm gonna put on my sunnies in celebration of Ben Bateman.
Yeah, I gotta see. Okay, here we go. Match history. Let me look this up here.
While he's looking that up, my lapel.
Oh, I got it right now. I got it right now. Though.
Scarab for those at home wondering.
Okay, so here's his previous opponents to Rick Raddus, Paige Ribeiro.
Yeah,
who was a rookie last year. Mm-hmm. Perry Nemiroff, who is. Not exactly a top tier player, but can give you fits for sure. Before that, he played Ethan Irwin in a number one contender match, which he lost, right? Before that, let's see here. He played Rocha. Mm-hmm. That was a sudden death win. Before that, he played Mark Riley, one, Dan Merle, Andrew Guy, Dan Merle, Paul Uyama, The Beast, Brendan Meyer, Paul Preston. What's interesting, though, to me there is these last few matches, Perry, Page, now Raddus.
Raddus.
Not exactly world beaters. And I don't care that Raddus is the best 3-0 player, which, first of all, that is not even remotely true, but good for him to have that mental, whatever you want to call it.
He is mental.
Mental status, I guess. We'll put it that way. So it's interesting that he goes after Raddus. You know, okay.
Are you saying Raddus is a low hanging fruit?
I am. I think because Raddus, to go after Raddus, yeah, he's 3-0.
Yeah,
but who did Raddus play to get the 3-0?
Well, let's talk about it. Who did he play?
Who did he play?
I called his first match of the season.
Yeah,
last year the debut, I believe, of Rick the Rager Raddus. Right? Didn't I do that?
I hope you would know. Yes, you did.
It was early as February.
Yeah, so he played Christy V. Then he played Peggy.
Christy V.
Then
she was wearing a Back to the Future shirt,
right? And then so he won that one by TKO over Christy V.
He had a JBL category, I believe.
Yes. And then he beats Peggy in Sudden Death.
The Goobins.
Goobins. And then he beats Frankie Alvarez. Remember, it was a Cantina match.
Yes.
And, okay, those are your, and then you want to, no disrespect to any of those players, but you're going to come out and trot out like you're the best 3-0 player ever? Okay, whatever. So this is who Ben Bateman's playing, or he calls out. Challenges.
We look, hey man, do you want to box? Like, do you want to box with Tyson? Like, in Mike Tyson's punch out, do you start with Tyson?
This is true.
No.
True enough. But what I'm saying is, like, there's other players out there, like, people are talking about Adam Collins. Right? There's a poll out there on the Showdown Twitter, and if I could pull that up real quick and see, I think Collins was on there. I think Oyama might have been on that. Poll, let me look it up.
I'm gonna find it too,
because I was like, oh, this is interesting that we're putting these names in the poll, and I was like, well, it could possibly be any of these people.
I'm scrolling, man.
So you got Merle, yeah,
Collins, Irwin, someone else, and right now it's 35 Merle, 35 Collins, 5% want to see Ethan Irwin, 25% say someone else.
Yeah, and I think last week I said it's like the dumbest thing in the world to challenge Merle. It'd also be pretty dumb to challenge Collins, in my opinion. I mean, like, that's no easy. So I think
in
terms of if you're trying to get a win, then, yeah, you go after someone like Raddus, who's 3-0, and okay. But because, yeah.
You want to win, bro.
You want to win, but he's not – but he's, like, it's
– No, stop everything that you're saying.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make any sense, and I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
If you're Ben Bateman and you want to get back in the swing of things, right? Your season was ended by a rookie, right? Rookie in Page, right? For Betty. Ruined. It's ended. Okay. If you're Ben Bateman, do you want to start off your season by calling out a big dog and potentially risking an L? Or do you want to, you know what, call somebody who had a good debut, good first season, not a great, but a notable one, right? A nice little statistical sheet.
Sure.
A member of a very successful faction last year. Would you rather call him out and get something that you're pretty sure it's like a 70-30 for you, you know, if not higher, right?
Okay.
Given your pedigree versus his inexperience, right? I would like to think that that's the route you'd want to go, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to be the 12th ladder of the alphabet starting off your season.
I see. I mean, I guess Raddus is probably the top of the lowest tier. Or the mid tier, maybe even. For like Bateman to take a step down a level.
Yeah.
I guess he's probably like the highest you could probably go after.
Yeah.
That would mean something. Okay. All right. I'll buy into that. But at the same time, I think there is a risk that he could lose to Raddus. He did lose to Paige. Who's to say he couldn't lose to Rick? And what's a more devastating loss? A loss to Rick Raddus or a loss to an Adam Collins? Which one's more devastating for your career in the singles division?
I mean,
losing to Raddus would be real bad.
That's a good point. I mean, I'm not in disagreement there. I mean, losing to Raddus isn't a great way to start off, but again, you feel better about your chances.
But sure, but what do we always say? To be the man, you got to beat the man. And Rick Raddus is not the man. He might, in his mind, he is.
But he is a man.
This is true.
So
technically speaking, I guess you're right, Raddus. I
look up my biology textbook. Yeah, so, okay, look, I get why you would call him out. And here's the thing. He does call him out. Rick Raddus comes out to sort of accept the challenge. But he says, I will play you so long as we play each other first in a teams match. But the thing is, you got to find a teammate, Daddy-O. I got Brother Lomas. You got to find you somebody. Okay?
Good luck, he says. He's like, good luck trying to find somebody. No one likes you in this league.
It's a fantastic. Who does like Ben Bateman?
Well, besides Kate, I guess. I mean, like, but maybe. She ain't playing.
I mean, maybe Kate likes Ben Bateman. Maybe.
I mean, he's burned every dungeon bridge he might have ever have had.
Dungeon bridge is burned. Finstock Exchange bridge is burned.
Right.
Luka, Merle, Finstock, whoever you want to talk. Kaiser. I couldn't think of his name. Kaiser. Right.
Right.
Burn the bridge. Oh, you want to keep going? Sam Levine, Drew McQueenie, bridge is burned. Right. Gone. I mean, who are you going to go for?
Right.
Mark Riley, gone.
That's right. Oh, my gosh, Mark.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, and it's not like he ingratiates himself with the community, right? It's not like he can go to the Schmodown Facebook group and
or the player community, rather. The player community.
Any community.
Well, I mean, I think there is a little subsection out there that adheres to the boss antics.
Well, I like the boss.
Yeah, he's okay in doses. But, you know, the player community is like, get away from me.
Right. And then here's the thing. Look, first of all, handsome guy. Right. Well dressed. Okay. Good head of hair on him. All right. Good player. Big. And I mean, huge whiteboard.
Oof.
Right. It's a big whiteboard. That man's around there.
I mean, honestly, kudos to him for continuing the big whiteboard thing, because I mean, you just open yourself up to so many jokes. Just so many jokes.
The jokes, sir.
I mean,
there's no overcompensation, though.
Yeah, it's a good thing we're a family show. Otherwise, anyways. Hello.
Hi now. So he asked him, you know, find you somebody, and he's pretty confident that he won't. And let's put a pin on it there, though. Let's talk about the Inner Geek, the match itself. Comes down to the wire. What are some big moments here that we should discuss?
Well, I mean, I think when you look at that first round, though, strong first half by both of these players, Hannah and Swift. That back half got really tricky for, especially Brandon Hannah. You look at the back half there, he answered one out of the five there of the back half of the first round. So that's not great. Jesse, you know, he was able to hit a few more than that, and he was actually up 7-6 after the first round. Now, that's, I think, probably a big point of pride for Jesse, right? After being dumped by Coy, and now he gets to sit across from the room and being looking at Coy and Hannah, being like, "Look, you could have had me. Your boy's down 1 point to me. You dumped me, and I'm up on your new guy." So I think that was a strong point for Jesse. And I was like, well, all right, let's see how the rest of this match plays out. And in round two, Jesse elects to go first. He tries to spin away from Fantasy Sci-Fi, rolls back around again on him. So he ends up sticking with it. He does all right there. He gets 6 points, which is, you know, all right. He has to check down the multiple choice a couple times. Not too bad, but he does get a huge 2-point steal taken off of him, which was massive in terms of how this match would eventually play out. But big, big opportunity there from Hannah to capitalize on, because, you know, it looked like Jesse, you know, I think he kind of had the momentum going on, even though at that point he had answered the first 3 questions there. You know, he's working his way through the category, not something that he obviously particularly wanted. That's why he spun away from it. But he was working through it, and I thought you saw a really well played, you know, the first, you know, 3/3 or 2/3 of this first round, or second round rather, played by Jesse. But then, you know, gives up that stumble. And actually, let me look up that question that he missed.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Again, last season was such a blur. I think last season and a half was such a blur for everybody. This is Jesse's. Is this his first match in studio?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. You couldn't tell it.
No, not at all.
You couldn't tell it at all. I mean, he seemed pretty good. You know what I mean? He felt comfortable out there. I really liked what he brought from a presence. His presence was felt, you know, and that's kind of hard to do. Especially when you're used to being across from a computer screen, to go into that studio. I didn't feel that he was intimidated. You know, I mean, I didn't feel that way. So yeah, I mean, kudos to Jesse to Jesse on this. And this is what number of Intergeekdom match is this for us? Because we had, of course, Chandru.
I think this is.
Is this the second one?
This should be the second one. Yeah.
Or is it the third one?
Second one.
Brandon
or third one.
Yeah. Second or third.
It's been a month.
Because sometimes when you look at the nowadays, like when you look at the score for Intergeekdom match, please remember, for people at home, the format changed a little bit. You know, everything's unified in the number of questions and things of that nature. You know what I mean?
For Intergeekdom. I think I made that mistake a couple episodes ago. But yeah. Intergeekdom stayed the same. Just basically singles was really reformatted for the most part. And teams a little bit.
Yeah.
But anyways.
So you were saying...
The question, which Oscar nominee plays Pat Novak, host of the Novak Element and prominent supporter of mechanized crime control in the film RoboCop 2014? He did not get Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes, he didn't.
But one Brandon Hanna, I got it. And that was a huge, huge steal there. 2 points. I mean, that's 2-point steals are just absolutely brutal and demoralizing, especially in Intergeekdom.
Yes. And again, like, Intergeekdom traditionally has that razor wire thing that we talk about, like, of you're kind of doing a tightrope act, especially when you're doing more of the elite stuff. I think that this is probably like mid card. I hate to even say that, but like, these guys aren't there at the title level.
Right.
Yet. Who knows what can happen in the course of a season. But as of now, I don't see either one of them as a massive contender for the championship, because you got to think about who the champion is.
Like, right.
Like you can't miss anything.
Not even just that, but like, look at Chandru and Smets. Did either of Brandon and Jesse play good enough to contend with Chandru or Smets? I don't think so. Right. So you're right. They're not there yet, but this is a start to a path, perhaps, to get to a number contender shot. And then, you know, let's see what happens. And hopefully, as the season goes on, you know, these guys play better. But we're not at the end of the match yet, because the end of this match, it's a heartbreaker in a sense. By the way, Brandon Hanna goes Middle Earth, liked it a lot, did pretty well in it. He gives up a 1-point steal. He got lucky on the first question that Jesse couldn't steal it from him. That would have been, kind of evening out the scales there, because it was a 2-point steal opportunity that Brandon missed, which was, which character narrates the prologue in 1978's Lord of the Rings? They both missed on Gandalf, and that's the correct answer. And so that's a big, big 2 points left on the board that Jesse could not capitalize on, and that really could have really that would have altered the way the final rounds of this match went, because when we get to that final round, the very rare, seldom seen has happened, but very rare, the 0-for-3 in the final round that not only loses you the match, but subsequently, he watched his 1 point lead after 2 rounds, 14-13, slip away, and Brandon Hanna only had to answer a 2-pointer. He gets it. Jesse, Spider-Man, Wizarding World, Jurassic Park, all whiffed on that. That's brutal. Looking at these questions though, Spider-Man, name one of the directors of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This one was tough because I think in inner geekdom, directors, that's ground floor. That's the ground floor stuff you got to know. Like, mm-hmm. You just got to know that. I don't know the particulars of what was going on in his brain. I think he threw out Warren Miller, right? So it was just like
in an Oscar-winning film.
Yeah, and there's three names to choose from, right? So it's that alone, I think, can trigger. You know, we're talking about this. You know, this. All right, gotcha. So that was a tough miss. And his Wizarding World, he goes, in Order of the Phoenix, what is the name of Hagrid's half-brother? Grop. He couldn't pull that one. Jurassic Park was his final category, the 5-pointer. Which character in the franchise says the line, "Why don't people listen to me? I use plain and simple English. I don't have any accent that I'm aware of." And that's a really good five. I love Jurassic Park, and I don't know if I could have pulled that in 15 seconds. Jesse does use a he did not use a repeat on that one, actually. Mm-hmm. He had two repeats previously on the first question in the third round, and then one on question 8 in the first round, but he did not use a repeat in this one. Brutal. I think by that point, I think you missed your 2 and your 3. You're not feeling too hot. You're not feeling too hot about yourself, and I don't know if it was just like, you know, one of these kind of, I'm not going to say he just gave up, but, you know, when you don't use your last repeat, I think that says something about where you're at mentally in terms of are you going to be able to pull it or not. And I think he knew, even with another repeat, that it ain't going to happen. Whatever, I missed my 2, my 3, it's over. And that was all she wrote. 15-14 is the final. Brandon Hanna gets his first win as part of the Quirky Mercs. Brandon Hanna was 11 of 17 in this match at 65% accuracy rate. Ooh. Jesse Swift was 12 of 20 for an even 60% accuracy rate. Okay performances, I think. I mean, less than from Jesse. Okay from Brandon Hanna. He's got to play better going forward. He had 6 in that first round, Brad. You got to be hitting 8, 9, if not perfect rounds in inner geekdom to contend.
8, 9, 10. Like 8 is probably the low end of the spectrum.
Yes, to contend, yeah.
Yeah, if you want to be a guy, I mean the guy, not a guy. Right. If you want to be a guy, you got to get at least 6. I mean the guy. So so congratulations to Brandon Hanna there. If we go, and by the way, just again shout out to Rachel.
Yes. Love having her for the intergeekdom matches because we then know for sure that like 99% of these words are going to be pronounced correctly.
Yeah.
Also, I do want to highlight something that Brandon Hanna had said in his post-match. He talked about how he hasn't been too open about his anxiety. And that comes into play when he's playing matches and preparing, I think. So while that is something to be mindful of, you know, when we're critiquing players or play, everything I just said, you know, I'm going to treat everyone the same. But I think it's to be commended that Brandon Hanna is not the only player out there that deals with stuff, you know, to whether they're playing or, you know, just in your daily life. And so to get out there, to put yourself out there, you know, and to answer questions and knowing that if you miss Gandalf, right, some people are going to come for your head, you know, and you got to deal with that stuff, which isn't always great, but in conjunction with his anxiety and whatnot. And I think it just, Yeah. So just again, just hats off to Brandon Hanna and everyone else, you know, who's, you know, we only see, you know, the shiny parts, you know, the nice glitz and glamour part. We don't get to see too often, you know, what's really going on inside and what struggles people can be dealing with. And even though this is a fun game, people take it seriously. They want to win. And, you know, for better or worse, you know, you can deal with stuff like this from time to time.
You know, I'll be honest, like when it comes to, you know, what people say or like commenters or stuff like that, like I remember a long time ago listening to The Breakfast Club, which is, you know, the popular show with Charlamagne Tha God and DJ Envy and Angela Yee. And Charlamagne said something one time about you're never as good as they say you are and you're never as bad as they say you are. Mm. And I remember when I heard that, it changed my whole perspective on the online community because, you know, back in the early days when I was doing like a bunch of the hip hop stuff, you know, obviously, I mean, I got all kinds of comments and things that would bother me, you know. But when I heard that, I was like, oh, you know what? Yeah, it's 100% right. Like people like to hate, you know, that's who people are, you know. Don't try to pay too much attention to that. But the anxiety thing, it's real, man. I'm sure everybody at some level goes through it. Like for me, like performing or anything like that, like I don't get it. But I deal with anxiety. Like who doesn't? You know? I'm not trying to even belittle Brandon Hanna by saying everyone does it, but I'm just saying like we all have our stuff.
Right.
We only see the shiny parts of everybody. But dude, there's been times where I've been so anxiety ridden, like I can't even get out of bed. You know what I mean? Like everybody goes through it. So I think it was really brave of him to share it.
And, oh, absolutely.
Especially on a show where thousands of people are going to be watching it, you know, and, and I'm also glad that we're in a space now in the world where we don't judge people as much anymore for any kind of mental health issue.
Right.
Whether that be low level generalized anxiety or depression or whatever, right?
Right.
I'm glad that we're more accepting than we used to be.
Yeah.
Overall. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And I think our community has been, I think, really great about this type of stuff recently in the past. So, like I said, you know, hats off to Brandon and every other competitor out there that is always dealing with mental hurdles to play this game.
But, you know, we don't – it's not like we don't talk about that stuff, you know, anymore, you know, nowadays. But one thing we don't talk about.
Bruno?
We don't talk about Jada. anyway.
Those are the two names.
These are two names, brother, that you don't want to talk about. So one thing we forgot to mention in the Rage Raddus challenge was a countdown clock was implemented.
the Raddus clock. Yeah.
The Raddus clock was implemented.
The Raddus countdown or the Raddus clock, whatever it was called. Yeah.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
Against Ben Bateman. But we do see after this match, Rick the Rage Raddus, baby, and Brother Lomas.
In color,
no less. Yes, that was a funny line. That
was good.
He said, he goes, you look good in color, brother. You know, Brother Lomas, you look great in color. and you know what? Brother Lomas does do a great job of his character, man.
He does, yeah.
He nails it. I mean, especially me growing up in Texas, like, you see so many televangelists on TV, and they all have that same kind of delivery. You know what I mean? They're very like, it's a southern drawl, but it's very, you know, it's very spiritual. You know, it's very like,
right. Did you watch The Eyes of Tammy Faye?
I haven't. No.
With Jessica Chastain and Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
Woo! Great.
You know, she won the Oscar.
Exactly. Yeah.
Some people might not have.
There might have been a little distracted.
Something happened. But, dude, so he nails that for me. There was a character back in, and I may have mentioned this last season, but there was a character back in the day in WWF. His name was Brother Love, right? And he would preach from the Book of Love and talk about, I love you, you know, and Bruce Pritchard is actually his name. He worked with us at Reality Wrestling for a little while, but that's kind of what it reminds me of too. Brother Lomas, Brother Love. Joel Osteen. Do you know Joel Osteen?
Yeah.
He's from Houston. You know, they all kind of has like a similar thing.
Isn't the guy that had like 60 grand hidden in his wall or something?
60. It was like 600.
It was something. Yeah.
My fiance showed him a house recently. I don't know if I can share that information, but I guess I can. Whatever.
Well, you did.
It's out there.
It's out there, man.
Out there.
I mean, people are always looking at houses. Whatever. Okay.
People look. People love to look. I look. My eyes work.
Yeah, and you know what? And you know what? Brother Lomas and Rick Grass were looking at. They were like, well, yeah, but they were also looking at 1-0 because they're like, ain't no way Ben's gonna get a partner for his match. We're gonna go 1-0. You know, he's gonna get a loss on his overall team record. That is Ben Bateman, and you know, Raddus and Lomas. You know, they're gonna be, you know, looking good, and you know, and it subsequently embarrassing Bateman, basically saying that he's got no friends in the Schmodown. So that's what they were banking on. And well, we get to the match, right? Lomas and Raddus come out, and then Bateman comes out by himself with that giant whiteboard.
Huge. Huge whiteboard. Massive whiteboard. And they're saying, like, you know, Mark and Ken are at the desk. Christian's the announcer. And they're saying, you know, Ben, do you have a partner? He's like, hey, man, you know, look, that's not how I want my seasons to start. I feel ridiculous with this thing out here. And talking about the whiteboard. And didn't want to tell him that he kind of looked ridiculous, too. But neither here nor there. So he says, I don't have a partner. And it looks like the time's going to expire. But then he gets a little message comes through on his phone.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, I have a partner. And you know what the coolest thing about this moment was? The coolest thing was the audience goes, ooh.
yeah. Oh, really? Oh. Who could it be?
Now, let me
could
ask,
it be? I was. And
you
yes.
You, okay, look, kayfabe, brother, kayfabe. But did you know anything?
No. So that was. So when I'm there, I try and stay away. I try to as much be present for the match, the theater of it all, right? I don't want to try and peek too far behind the curtain and whatnot, because I want to take it in as genuinely as I can so that I can deliver it here on the rundown as genuinely as I can. And so, you know, of course, I think you're thinking about, like, okay, well, Merle, you know, was in town, and it's like, yeah, he could certainly walk right through that curtain, and that could be him. Because I really had no idea who else it could be, because, you know, who else is on the den. But, like, you know, they were talking about on the desk, Jen Kemp, you know, she's not – I knew she wasn't there, so it couldn't have been her. And you're not going to have Saul, right? Because I don't think that's his area of expertise. And obviously you're not going to have Thomas Harper. He's the Star Wars champ. So you're thinking, like, well, who else? But, man, coming through that curtain – reminiscent of, what was it, Free For All 2 or 3? Was it 2 or 3? 3? Free For All 2? When Andrew Guy busts through the curtain when he came out to the Dan Merle music, the theme, and it was, yeah, wow. I can't, I'm trying to picture the graphic
won the
in
first.
My mind.
You know, it was 3.
Yeah.
It wasn't Brianne.
Sam Levine won the first.
Then Brianne. Who won the third one?
Merle.
It was, so it must have been the Brienne.
It must have been 2. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Shoot. Okay, wow. I don't know. We've been doing
get it together,
for,
Frank!
We've been doing this for 6 years, I mean. Right. We've entered into the, who won? Who was that? When was that zone? Yeah.
Well, and that's all for us this week here on the Schmodown Rundown. We will see you back tomorrow morning. Weather looks to be 70 degrees and sunny in Friendswood, Texas. Don't forget to pay the lady.
Anyways, so Andrew Guy, Team Action is back, Brad.
They're back. Yeah, he comes through the curtain, and you know what? Not only could the people not control their excitement watching from around the world and right there in the studio, but the microphones couldn't stand it either. Andrew Guy was so loud, all the microphones were shouting. They were reverberating off the walls in the pastel pink and green studios. They loved Team Action getting back together. Did you see the live chat explode? You know, I kind of knew what was going to happen. They said 6-4.
When they brought the record, I'm like, oh, okay.
6-4.
I was like, well,
my favorite part is, though, is this. Christian didn't know what to call him. Was he the debonair Drew Guy?
Oh,
was
right.
He dastardly Drew Guy? We don't know what kind of Drew Guy we're going to see, because we haven't seen Drew Guy as a player. Since, was his last match against Ben?
Singles wise, yes.
Singles wise. And then his team match was the family final?
Family, yeah.
Wow. Wow.
And their last match together as team action was against the Shire Wolves.
They're not a team anymore either. I don't want to be
player. Right. Yeah.
So what did you think, though, seeing action back together?
I was real curious how they were going to play, A. But B, I was like, man, the antics, the theatrics, they are back, baby. Like,
they're back, baby.
Oof. And I'm all for it. I'm all for it, Brad.
I mean, how could you not be for it? This is one of, really, when we look back at the history of the Movie Trick Showdown, the team's division, you know, they are one of the most influential teams of all time.
Absolutely. 100%. I mean, they've left such a mark on the game from the minute they entered the league. I mean, I remember, I'm trying to remember our conversation when we first covered them when they came into the league. I don't think you were on the rundown yet, obviously, actually, yet at that point.
It was 2014, right? Yeah, probably
not. No. When Team Action came in, it was in 2017.
Yeah, I wasn't there either.
Yeah. I don't think you were right there. But I remember, you know, they came out, and I was like, man, I knew nothing about them.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I hate these douchebags. Like, I do not like them at all. Get away from my game. And that only meant that it was working, what they were doing, right?
Sure.
And eventually, when you are...
Did you get, like, the whole heel thing back then?
Sort of. It was a little more difficult, I think, at that time because you're bringing in other established personalities outside of the Schmodown, and then you bring them in. And so, like, for instance, for John Rocha, right? Like, I know how he was outside of Schmodown. So you bring him in, and he's this whole other type of character. It was a little bit more easier to kind of, well, it's not easier, but it was also like, what is going on? Like, how do you start separating? But with, like, Ben and Andrew, I hadn't seen any of their stuff prior to Schmodown.
But Andrew, as some people call them.
Who? Who are some of these people?
And that's all we have. Schmodown right now. Remember, it's 70 degrees and sunny in Friendswood, Texas. Be careful of that traffic there on I-45 on Fridays. It's rush hour, people. They're trying to get home. There's a big show going on in Galveston at the Pleasure Pier. Make sure you make reservations at Bubblegum Shrimp. You don't want to miss out. You don't want to get shut out. Until next week, I am Brad Gilmore, and that's all.
Anyways, when they came into the league, I was like, all right, they're not really this douchey. They can't be. But yet, I was like, man, I hate these guys. I really, really do. And there was nothing more that I wanted. I really wanted to see a team action Patriots match. But I was like, these guys aren't good enough to get to the Patriots level. It'll never happen. No. And it never did. But I would have, like, I was like, let me just pit bad guy versus bad guy, bad team versus bad team, and that would have been great. But, they have a rich history, team action, that is, of really just, I mean, like, their match against Lights of the Party. I mean, that's with Robert and Vanessa. I mean, what a fantastic match. You know, I think eventually they referenced the Nerds Watch match, right? Their Shire Wolves match. Just a lot of big matches, big moments. Obviously, top 10. You have, you know, team action in top 10 and their squabbles, right? Remember, top 10 beat. Team action beat top 10 in a tournament, right? And then they've had a rematch at Spectacular, which led to Andrew Guy tackling John Rocha and getting suspended.
Yeah.
So, which then spurred basically Ben Bateman's singles career, right? That then took off for him, and then he would eventually go on to become singles champ, but then lose it to Merle and all that and the other thing, and then now he's challenging Raddus, but he's got to play his team match with team action, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, just so much with team action. There's so much history that they are so integral to the evolution of the Schmodown as a whole. And so to see them back in the fold that way was very exciting. To see Andrew Guy, we've seen him in suits, right, recently on the desk. But
yes. It's
different when it's team action time and he's wearing a suit. There's like only, there's like a team action suit he wears. Like everything else is great, but it's like.
Back with the white tie.
It's so weird that it's kind of so synonymous and iconic for him when he's in that suit. looking that way, you're, and he could wear the same suit at the desk, but when he's outside of that desk wearing that suit, strutting around, humping the podiums, it's just.
Let me tell you this. So I know you, like, you've gotten up to date on your wrestling history, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I do all right.
So you've heard of the group D-Generation X.
Oh,
right?
Of course. DX,
right.
Love them.
Everyone.
I actually watched like a best of D-Generation X last night.
Oh, really?
Just on a whim. Yeah. I just on YouTube. Yeah.
Well, because
phenomenal.
They've been on my mind too, because Triple H just, you know, announced his retirement. Right. And so I've been thinking about DX. And there was many formations of DX throughout the years, right? You know, you had the one where Triple H led, and there was X-Pac, Road Dogg, Billy Gunn, China, you know, all kinds of these members.
Oh, the China days were phenomenal.
So you know, you think about them, but they started out really as a really truly as a duo of Shawn Michaels and Triple H, right? That's kind of their most known form, or their best form. And it was cool to see Triple H with X-Pac and Road Dogg and Billy Gunn and China and those guys. But whenever Triple H was with Shawn Michaels, it was just a different level, right? And they did like 3 or 4 reunions. And every time they came back as a team, it was just – it felt different. It had a great energy about them. We've seen Ben Bateman in Who's the Boss, solid team. We've seen him with Danger Zone, Dan Merle, solid team, right? And I liked both of those iterations of the Ben Bateman team journey.
Yeah.
But there's nothing like him and Andrew Guy together. They are the Shawn Michaels and Triple H. They are the DX of the Schmodown. Two guys who are better than they have any right to be, who can insult you, can play, they can talk the smack, they can back it up. And it was great to see them back, even if it was for one time only. But Andrew Guy coming back as the Dastardly One, because that's clearly who he was in this match.
Yeah.
Talking smack, taking selfies of the scoreboard, and being an all-around ass is something that I saw coming from a mile away. And I loved every second of it.
Oh, it was – I mean, it's crazy to be so nostalgic for, like, 4 years ago. It's just like – like, what? But, yeah, I really – I was like, man, you know, Sam Levine just won the belt, you know, and now Team Action's back, and it's like – what year is it? I mean, you know, it's like 2017 all over again.
Buddy, what year is it?
Yeah, that was it was great. Problem. But this match though was pretty great for like that first round though. Let me talk about this first round, Brad.
Talk about it.
We had double Dewberry from Ben and Andrew Guy in that first round. They go 11 points. Rick Raddus. Perfect round with the bonus as well. He had 11 points. It was the only brother, Lomi, who he missed the first question. Didn't get, what was it, Evil Dead? He did not. That's the only question he missed. So he had 9 points. And that meant that Team Action was up 22-20 after the first round. Real quick point, though, about this first round and what it means for the Ben Bateman Rick Raddus match. I think. This first round between just watching Ben and Rick play this first round together, I think it sets up probably – I think Ben Bateman's looking at this first round thinking, I may have bitten off more than I can chew, looking the way Raddus played in that first round. It ain't going to be a cakewalk for Ben Bateman in that one-on-one matchup with Raddus. The way that Rick played in that first round, it's going to be a tight match, I think. And I think Ben Bateman might be like, you know what? Yeah, maybe it was 70-30. Nah, maybe it's more like 60-40.
60-40, baby.
You know, he might have, you know, I think Raddus might have
scared him a little bit.
A little bit. And he, like, Raddus played a perfect round. But Ben played a perfect round too. And it's going to come down to that second round and see how that goes. But take that aside now. And you can do that first round, or I'm sorry, the second round where. What does Team Action do? What do they love to do, Brad?
They love to antagonize.
They love to play from behind, Brad.
Oh, well.
That's their trademark. They love to play from behind.
Everyone has their thing.
That's true. And this was their thing. So they let The Reckoning, as Radis and Lomas are known as. They spin away from the 2010s. I think it's a good move. Broad decade, right?
Sure.
And they end up on Rocky. Very narrow franchise, right? And they played Rocky, I think, for that, for this specific category, I think they played him. It was okay. It was okay. They got 6 points out of possible 10. They gave up a 2-point steal.
I know.
Two team action.
Oh!
Huge. Monstrous. Let's go to that question. Let me pull it up here real quick. Let's see.
There were some that they should have had so quickly.
So the second question that Lomas and Radis got in the Rocky category was, how many films in the Rocky franchise did Sylvester Stallone receive a writing credit on? And neither Radis or Reckoning or Team Action could pull the 7, right? There was some talk about that in the studio about, you know, was it, because I think people got, some were like, well, is it Creed 1? But that was all Coogler. He pitched that to Stallone, and Stallone was on Creed 2. I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
Right. So
they brought back some of the Drago stuff. I'm sure he
scripted. Yeah. And then you get to this fifth question, the last one for them. And it was Paul McHale's father, Carmine, is first seen in Rocky 2. In what film in the franchise does he next appear? And turns out it's Rocky 5. And The Reckoning was not able to pull that one. And Team Action pulls that one. And this is a big 2-point get for Team Action. And we'll get to the reasoning why that is. Team Action, look, their debut already was phenomenal, or for this year, their return, I should say, has already been phenomenal. But then the first spin they get, Brad?
TC Legend,
baby. And I mean, you cannot write this any better.
I know, it's so crazy.
I was like, you got to be kidding me.
So crazy that they got Tom Cruise. But I was, I guess pleasantly wouldn't be the word, but I was somewhat surprised by some of the difficulty they experienced in the round, right? I mean,
yeah,
a little, right?
I think the only one I give him a pass on is the first question. What is Maverick's father's name in Top Gun?
It's tough.
That's a very tough question. And I'm not trying to flex here or brag or anything, but like, I kind of knew it because I know the line in the movie, and it's said by Goose, and he's like, something to the effect of, I know they wouldn't let you into the academy because you're Duke Mitchell's kid. And like, that's what sticks in my mind. And so like, I knew it took me a minute to get there. I was like, what's the line? Because I know the line in the movie. I just had to try and recall it. I was able to do it.
Recall.
But it is a tough question. I mean, that's a real tough, because they only say it once in the movie. And it's that one line. And I know that Ben and Andrew, you know, huge TC Legend fans, right? Huge Top Gun fans. You know, Ben Bateman was in the Top Gun exhibition match against Mark Ryder last year. And so I was like, man, are they going to get it? But then they got on the multiple choice. I'm like, okay, cool. And then the other question we got to talk about here is the Mission Impossible 2. You know, they challenged this one. The question was, which film in the Mission Impossible franchise is set largely in Australia? And they end up saying MI2. And the desk goes, that is incorrect. Now, that's because the answer key says Mission Impossible 2. So they challenge, and basically they're like, what else are you going to call this movie? Like, what else do we call it? You know, it's Mission Impossible 2. It's, you know.
And it's stylized MI2.
Yeah. And then they get the rebuttal for Reckoning. And Lomas pretty much goes, you know, look, yeah, you said Mission Impossible in the question, so they didn't have to say that. They could have just said 2 and have been right. But because you say MI2, that's like saying Mission Impossible MI2. That's not, that's not the title of the movie. It's Mission Impossible 2. And so when there's that challenge and they're deliberating on it, basically the movie is commonly referred to as MI2. And you look at IMDb, Wikipedia, anywhere else you want to look at, it's referred to as MI2. And I think in practicing in good faith and not being so nitpicky. Yes, I think this year we are really cracking down on you need to say the exact title of the movie. I think there's been some instances already where it's just been like, oh, you just missed it, or you added a little too much. So looking at this ruling, I would have to agree, because first of all, they're going to go off the key, first of all. Mm-hmm. If it does not, you know, especially if you're looking at a movie title, right? If it's not the exact title on the key and they don't say that, you're going to get a ruling of incorrect. Just as a base level thing, right? And then if you challenge it, then we'll go look at it and say, okay, what's the reason behind this? Why are we going to allow MI2? Okay, this makes sense. It was pop culturally known as MI2. You can say that, you know, it's when you say MI, that's Mission Impossible. You're just shortening it, right? So it's right. Not incorrect. You know, it's a second one. So I was okay with the initial ruling. I actually liked the rebuttal from The Reckoning, even though Team Action was like, that's the most horrible rebuttal they've ever heard, which is par for what they're going to say, of course. And then I was satisfied and I was happy with the overall ruling. And I thought it made sense. And they got the 2 points. Yeah. And there we go.
They should. I mean, I get it. I do get that you – I get it. But if they didn't get those 2 points – Andrew Guy would have torn that studio up.
I mean,
Andrew Guy would have been in there breaking everything he could afford. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then
because that would have been one of those ticky tack ones.
I mean, this is at the point where he defiles the desk? Correct, right? Is this the point?
I think this is
right.
Is
the, and then
desk defiling began.
And then Lomas has just a great line. He goes, you know, you will need to marry the desk now. Just like, it was, I mean, in the studio, I mean, it just sure killed everybody. It killed. I mean, it was just.
You will need to marry the desk now.
It was phenomenal. It was really great.
Well, we get, though, through TC Legend, and it comes down to, you know, the third and final round.
Yeah.
And they get the job done. Action.
Yeah.
Action with a T, with a K, and an O. 32-31, final score. They are now 7-4 with 2 knockouts.
Those are 3 now.
Right? Well, I guess it's 3. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I still don't know how we count TK. I don't know if
it's. They're one and the same. It just depends on which round they occur in. What I will say is, too, that 2-point steal is a big deal because it gives them a 6-point lead as opposed to a 4 if they didn't get that 2 points, right? Which then means. If it's a 6-point gap, well, even if you answer your 2 and your 3, you have to hit the 5 too. So that put Reckoning in such a huge hole that, you know, coming out 32-26 going to that final round, it could have been 2 points shallower, right? Could have been a 4-point lead. So that would have meant that after Reckoning answered their Tom Cruise 3-point question, you know, then Team Action would have had to answer a question. And who's to say they would have got their 2-pointer wrong? They probably wouldn't have, but you never know. And then what if they got their 3-pointer wrong? What if they got their 5-pointer wrong? So it could have developed into something else. It could have developed into a much closer finish, which, this match didn't, obviously, with a TKO. Looking at the numbers, Brad, here for Team Action, you know how many questions they missed, Team Action?
Let's see. None?
Just one.
One.
And it was that steal opportunity. Right. And so it wasn't even a question of their own, really, but it was an opportunity that they had, and they missed that one, and that's fine. So they went 28 out of 29 in their re-return to the league.
Wow.
Reckoning played a pretty great game as well, just that 5-pointer, right, giving up costly steals. They went 25 out of 29. That's an accuracy rate of 86%. So a very nice debut from Radis and Lomas, but the TKO is going to loom heavily over this result and kind of, I think – you know, oh, whoever plays them next, you know, oh, they got TKO'd by Team Action. But let's, you know, they should also then remember that they only missed 4 questions in the match.
Don't let it loom on Lomas. Don't let it loom. Don't let it that happen.
Another great line, Brad, though, was the Bewitched question. Oh, and Andrew, you can hear Andrew Guy say when Lomas answers, you can hear Andrew Guy saying, you're not allowed to watch that movie. You can't watch that movie. It was really great. It was really great.
In the post-match, it's revealed that Andrew Guy is going to be managing Ben Bateman, which is odd.
Yeah.
Because of the Kate. Oh, I still have these sunglasses on.
Oh, you do. Gosh. You do.
Because of the Kate thing. I just realized that I still have these on the whole time.
Yeah, so I don't know what that means. I mean, Andrew said he's not returning as a player. He just came back to help his buddy out, right? Team Action is not staying. It's not a permanent thing, it sounds like. But for Andrew to say, no, yeah, I'll come back and manage my boy, Ben. How does that work with the Den and Kate being their manager? And what was interesting is that when we saw Kate and Ben in that scene last week, right? They're like, "Oh, let's challenge right now." And Ben's like, "No, I'll do it on Titans." Who wasn't at that match, Brad? Kate was not there.
Yeah, it's true.
What I mean,
F's going on?
What's going on? I don't know. Maybe that's something we'll find out in the weeks to come. But you know, will she be like? That's what I want to know. Is Kate or Andrew Guy going to be at Ben's side for the Radis match?
Which one? Who knows?
Because it sounds like Andrew Guy's going to be there.
We're going to find out next week is where we're going to find out. And we're going to see how this comes into effect. But you know what? I mean, we do have questions for Team Action. And guess what? They are going to be joining us here momentarily on the show for some unknown reason. They have requested that I not be a part of the interview.
Is that right?
Yeah. They've been booked for 2 weeks. Ben Bateman, we have had him booked.
Yes, we've had Ben Bateman, yeah.
We've added Andrew Guy, and since Andrew Guy's been on the show, added to the interview, I've now been asked to leave. So, Frank, you're going to hold down the fort for Team Action, and we'll see how it goes. Here they are.
Yeah, let's see how this goes. Right now, I am joined by Ben Bateman and Andrew Guy. We recently saw them team up as Team Action. They reunited for a match against the Reckoning of Rick Radis and Brother Lomas. Guys, welcome to the show.
What's going on, Frank? Good to be here, man. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Always fun to celebrate a victory.
Yeah, yeah. It was how many years in the making was that? When's the last time you guys played? 4 seasons?
What's 2018. Yeah, and in our victory moment after the match, it kind of hit us both looking back to that last Team Action match. It had been, it's crazy how much time had passed. There's just no denying it.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of want to talk about your, I guess, struggle, if you will, Ben, about trying to find a partner when Radis called you out. You know, he said, there's no friend in the Schmodown for Ben Bateman. You aren't going to find anybody.
You've burned several bridges together, Frank.
Yes. I guess there's one bridge left that wasn't burned. That was when you showed up for the match, Andrew. But Ben, like, how many people did you go to before Andrew finally, you know, was like, he'll answer the call?
I mean, look, I said in the match and on the broadcast that I'm loved in this league. I believe it. Everybody has, you know, they can present themselves how they want to politically, but I think I have a lot of friends in this league. So, you know, I reached out to a few people and I got the responses that I expect. There was one or two surprises, I'm not going to lie, but
you reached out to people expecting them to say no?
Is that what you're saying?
It was
a smooth day. It went well for me in the end.
In the end, that's true. And Andrew, I got to talk to you about your play and your decision to back up your buddy here. You know what? I mean, you've been on the desk. Everyone's been loving your presence at the desk the past couple of seasons. What was that decision like to say, hey, I got to answer the call from my buddy Ben and reunite Team Action?
You know, I didn't ever think it was going to come to this. I have hung up my hat, if you will. And honestly, that day, I wasn't calling any matches. I was just there kind of hanging out. And I figured there's absolutely no way I'm going to play in this match because I don't want to. There's no reason for me to. But then as the time kept going on, it was kind of like watching like a small animal in a trap. I started to feel bad for Bateman. You know, we've been through so much together. And he was kind of squirming, and I could tell, you know, I know the guy. I could tell that he wasn't getting the responses he wanted. So you figure, you know, I was like, why not? Why not show these guys how to actually play in the movie trivia Schmodown? Why don't we show them actually how to trash talk? All these things. And I think we took them to school.
I got to tell you, Frank, you know, Drew has been so abundantly clear in the years since playing that he was never going to play again.
Yeah.
And it's been so like, and we, you know, we do this show Root of the Question. We've done it for now a handful of times and we break down questions and it's evident to me how good he is. It's not like I'm missing something when we do the show. Right. And a lot of time has passed since we played on a team together. So it didn't really even cross my mind at the top of the list to think about this as a possibility. This was kind of one of those things where when it happened, I almost didn't want to ask out of respect in the first place. I just thought I'd get slapped in the face. Like, why would I do that? You know, that kind of a thing. And look, it worked out. But I think what happened in the match is evident as far as how much better of a player this guy is than 4 years ago. It's a long time ago. And he beat the greatest of all time back then.
That's true. And I got to ask you, Andrew, because we recently saw one Sam Levine return to the arena, to play a match, and now he's a champ, where he was a manager on the sidelines, not playing. But, you know, in respect to you, you've been at the desk watching all these players play. Was your time at the desk, did that give you confidence watching all these other players come in, rookies and other vets, you know, say, hey, I could probably still hang and I'm going to help out my buddy Ben here. I won't embarrass him when I go out there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you never want to embarrass your friend out there. And I know how important the league is to Ben. I know how important his record is to him. And picking up another loss along the way would not be great. I always want to win. That's how I've always been since day one. But I think taking time away and kind of looking at the Schmodown from like a bird's eye view, you start to take a little bit of that pressure off your shoulders. You know, when we first started playing as Team Action, the best matches I felt like we played were the ones where we were just doing our thing. And that's exactly what you guys saw on Friday, was just Team Action to the fullest in like their final form. And, you know, as long as there's no pressure, right? It was a win-win situation for me. If I lose, whatever, people have a good time. They see Team Action back. If I win, then, you know, I win. And that, you know, we all know what comes with that. So I think the fact that there was very little pressure and the fact that I've also been able to step away from the league for as long as I have and just look at it as a spectator kind of takes some of the, maybe take some of the Kool-Aid out of your veins. Which is every single time you walk in that building, you must win. It is important. It's do or die. And that can really get in your head.
Now, Ben, you've had a couple different teammates since your original run with Andrew, that being Dan Merle and Mark Riley. How has the dynamic
beaten
between
both of them? Just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, that is a great stat, Andrew. And, you know, I love the stats, and that's a great one. Ben, what's the dynamic like with Andrew compared to the likes of Merle, you know, arguably the greatest player of all time, and Riley, who's, you know, a founding member of the Schmodown, and he did so much for the league. But, you know, when I saw you and Andrew up there at the desk, it didn't look like you guys missed a beat at all. It literally looked like, you know, you just started playing your 11th match, you know, after you had played your 10th. You know, what's it like with Andrew Guy compared to the likes of Merle and Riley?
Such a different experience. Honestly, all three of them are totally different teammates. I think the thing with the Team Action that is so different from those is that when we're up there, first of all, if I stood completely still like a scarecrow and answered questions, we'd be entertaining. So, you know, it, when I have somebody who's going to be up there and put on a show to the degree that Andrew does, it's like, and so much of my game is trying to trash talk my opponents and trying to be kind of cocky and smug. I don't have to do any of that. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, like, when we're playing, I think I care so much about winning, and I've been at this for so long. And the amount of time that Drew has been on the desk and not been competing, I think he just, when it comes down to it, he looks at me and he's like, if this matters to you, you're going to take charge to want to win. And this is on. And if we lose, whatever. I'm not here to really compete. Whereas with Riley, I think there would be some pressure on him in those days of like, well, if I don't show up, I'm going to be judged. And then he'd get in his own head. He'd be a deer in headlights sometimes. With Dan, he is such a great player, but he's so polite. He's a real person. He's not really assertive. And so occasionally those moments would happen. Who's going to take charge? It's very hard to deal with Dan Merle when you think about it that way. Like, it's really hard to just be like, Dan, you're wrong, I'm right. Occasionally I'll do it, but really a lot of the time with Dan, that dynamic is not natural. So with Drew, I think it's the years of broadcasting. It's the way we communicate. It's like, there's also a shorthand. We've done
how many hours, 300 hours of podcasting about movies together. So like sometimes a question will come in and I don't have to be like, oh, I think it's this. It's like, we like look at each other. It's like, of course we both know that answer, right? There's not even a hesitation. So I just think there's some of that that goes into the way we communicate that, that you don't really have to think about that comes with knowing somebody as long as we have known each other.
I kind of want to get into your match here against Radisson Lomas. Your first round specifically, you guys both go perfect. You know, Radis goes perfect too, and Lomas, he missed the first question, but answered everything thereafter. After that first round, you guys have a little bit of a lead there. Was it going better than you could have ever anticipated with such a long layoff between, you know, your last match and this match? I'll start with Andrew.
Did you see what I did when I got a perfect round? I mean, it obviously wasn't as impactful as we'd like it to be when you have three people scoring a perfect round and one person just being shy of a perfect round so they don't get the bonus point, right? It was a little closer than maybe you'd hoped after scoring 22 in round one. But at the same time, we have always known as a team that round one is the biggest hurdle. And then once you get to round two and round three, you can really work together. You can strategize much better. So I think coming out of round one, we knew we were going to win. I think halfway through round one, I knew we were going to win. There was a lot going on in that match on our side of the studio, the stadium, whatever you want to call it. Whereas I think Radis and Lomas were just trying to remember how to spell.
Yeah, fair enough. Honest. Yeah, yeah.
I think he's right. And I think, I don't know, you say halfway through the first round, it's probably pretty accurate. There was definitely a moment when I realized I could see on their faces that every question that came in, it felt like they were slightly tilted uphill. And we were flat or even rolling downhill. It just got easier every question that came in. We were loose and comfortable and having a good time. And I think once it got to round two, you know, even just the amount of time they were taking and how nervous it felt like they were to answer questions that I felt like they would know the answer to, I just couldn't imagine a world in which these guys would be able to not make mistakes, basically. And they played pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah.
And I think what made this reunion so special and even more perfect was the fact you guys got Tom Cruise as your second round category. I mean, come on, you can't write that any better, can you? I mean, what'd you think you got Tom Cruise? And you're like, oh, it's a wrap for sure?
I think when they asked us what is Maverick's dad's name to start the category, we were both a little bit like, is this going to be the Tom Cruise category that we were expecting?
Yeah, it definitely felt like we knew we had to take TC Legend no matter what. It's just out of principle, if Team Action spins that in their reunion match, they're going to have to take it. But also with those categories, with how wide they are, how long Tom Cruise has been on the wheel, it wasn't like a super great strategy move to just take it because it's Tom Cruise, but we know his movies very well. But when you get into round two and you start getting those questions that PJ and PLD want to throw out, like what's his name and what's his dad's name?
Yeah.
Those are incredibly specific questions about movies that I think both of us have not seen in a very, very long time. At least I haven't seen either of them in a very long time. So it was also like a really good reminder, I think, getting question one, because I think we were up two going into our spin. Yeah. Or down two, excuse me, going into our spin. So it felt like no matter what, we'd come out on top. But it was a very, very quick wake-up call for us to be like, all right, this is super fun. We're playing really great. But if this is question number one, we can't give up steals. We can't give up this lead. So, you know, as much as we like to have a good time, there was still a lot of strategy. And I think the other part of the conversation is that, like, Ben and I have spent now, 6 years talking about Schmodown strategy or whatever it is. And every single year, I think we get exponentially more obsessive about the strategy in the game. And I think that really kind of shined through in that match.
I mean, in that second round there, Frank, we're losing by two going into a 10-point possible category, which means that we played with exactly the margin for error in the round we knew that we had to, which is to maintain a 6-point lead, you can multiple choice it twice. We had to get exactly 8 points to maintain six, which we all know is what you need if you really want to lock out your opponent. And we did exactly what we needed to. If we go for it, because funnily enough, and I asked this question in the match, is it Kovac or Kovics?
Yeah.
I looked at Drew and they asked the question. I said, I think it's Ron Kovacs, and it was Kovic. So if we had gone for it, I would have been exactly off and we would have given up a 4-point steal potentially. And that's exactly why we, you know, Drew's like, we have to go to multiple choice. I don't care that you're close on it. We have to do it.
And it was, you know, there's a similar conversation with Mission Impossible 2, where it was like, yeah, we were trying to think and narrow it down to which place it would be. I, like, notoriously love that movie. And I remembered that there's a character named Billy, I think, that's introduced or something like that. He's like their Australian guy that Simon Pegg replaces later on. And I was like, it's got to be that movie. It's the only movie that I can think of where it's like there's a big part in Australia. And then we get the, we say MI2. And we get ruled wrong. And it was like, what is happening in this round right now?
Yeah.
What's his dad's name? And we're not going to get MI2 correct. So it was rocky there for just a moment.
Yeah. I mean, the Mission Impossible 2 MI2 thing, I think, is an example of how the Schmodown this season is really emphasizing if the answer is a movie title, we're looking for the exact title. Although I think MI2 is one of those loopholes, I guess, or gray areas where you can't really anticipate because it's so like ingrained in pop culture that's referred to as MI2 that for all intents and purposes, just to try and keep things even across the board, once you know you look at the answer key and you say MI2, but we look at the answer key that says Mission Impossible 2, it seems like you guys were just absolutely beside yourself and you gave your argument, and the reckoning they gave their argument,
they gave
the
worst rebuttal of all time.
Did they give a what I honestly feel like they just farted in the microphone.
Well, I think what Lomas said was basically nonsense. If you're going to say MI2, then you're saying the title of the movie is Mission Impossible MI2, which would be wrong because it's Mission Impossible 2. So I thought they had a decent enough argument there.
Lomas's justification was, you asked for what number in the franchise, so if they had said 2, it would have been correct, but because he said MI2, it's incorrect. It's the second entry in the franchise, and it's called MI2 on the cover of the box. How is that incorrect? It's no different.
In this moment, I think, was, like, pretty funny, too, because, like, you know, when we used to challenge, it was, like, a blood war. Like, someone was going to walk away from this battle with blood, and someone was going to win, right? And, like, definitely a moment where I was like, all right, remember, you're on the desk. Ellis is up there. Ken is up there. We need to be a little bit more professional here. But also, again, you talk about the obsession. We know the rules in and out. Ben helps write the rules, or he's part of that rule team or whatever. And I have to know them in and out to be on the desk. So, like, the idea that we would make a mistake that glaring in a category where we know the answer and we also know the rules, it was just, it was like, there's no way, no how we're going to lose this challenge.
Right. Did you, in fact, end up marrying that podium? Did that happen? Is that going to happen?
Ashley was not excited about my relations with the desk.
Yeah.
But that's the past. We're going to move on for that. And we're going to try to be stronger because of it.
Excellent. And you talk about getting that 6-point lead there, Ben. You know, you put your opponent, you know, right there behind the eight ball, and they hit their 2 and their 3. Now, their 5 was a fences question. Mm-hmm. Mm. I mean, I'm assuming you're going to tell us you guys knew the answer, but how difficult of a question do you think that really was in your estimation?
Did you even think about the answer, Ben, or were you too busy making Denzel movie references with me?
So it starts, what's amazing about that exchange, this is my favorite part of the whole match, because you can hear our mics during the exchange, and basically first Drew makes the comment, man is not spelled G-U-N, which is an Equalizer 2 reference, which is one of my all-time favorite Denzel quotes. And then I couldn't understand what they were saying. They kept asking, his name is Core, I think. And I kept saying to Drew, are they saying corn? And he said, I believe they're saying corn, like the food corn.
Like the food that you eat.
And then I asked it again. I was like, I still don't understand what he's saying. I think if you listen to it on the mic, you can basically hear that conversation happening in its entirety. There's only like 2 or 3 options this could even be, actually.
Yeah.
I don't actually think it's as easy of a question as you make it out to be, though, because the promotional campaign for that movie, though it does have shots of his son talking to him, it's really mostly just him arguing with Viola Davis and then him on the back of a garbage truck. And I've been standing in the same place for 18 years. She's like, I've been standing with you, which is a great clip from the trailer, by the way. I don't think there's really much in the way of sports in the trailer for the movie. And it's a very boring movie. So I don't know that those guys have seen Fences. It's certainly what, when I think Denzel Washington sports movie, I don't think Fences right away. But I have seen it, so probably we get there. I don't know.
I think the athletic son part of that question, I think, really led them down a different path, perhaps, if they haven't seen Fences, as you surmise. So,
I had no idea.
Yeah, you guys get that TKO. I mean, that's kind of I mean, were you guys looking forward to answering some final round questions, at least to play with that, or the strategy just, or you're just thankful that it ended in a TKO, let's get out of here?
It had been such domination. Like, why not? Why not just end it in a TKO? Literally, it would have just been watching them bleed out for a few more questions. So I think we honestly did them service at that point.
I think there's nothing more dangerous. There's nothing more dangerous than going into a final round, up a lot of points, and somehow having to answer those last few questions. Because as I know from experience, and as I've seen, most of the most successful runs you'll ever see from any player or team have a lot of knockouts because you don't have to get to a 5-point question. And as soon as you touch that 5-point question, the game completely changes. Because we know as well as anybody, it's just a coin flip. You're going to know the five or you're not going to know the five. It's like even the best percentage players go on runs, dry runs, where they miss a lot of fives. So you don't want to get to that point. I'm glad we didn't have to answer any questions, but it crazier stuff has happened. So I'm much happier that we avoided it than anything else.
And I think it's really important for people to recognize that, like, I don't think enough credit is given to the 3-point question out there. The 2-pointer, usually you should be able to get. And people used to always say it was something that we talked about for a long time, that the lesser player should take the 2-pointer. But I think the person that is maybe the lesser player, but I think it should be more about if both these people are comfortable with this category, who knows more in general in the grand scheme of movie trivia to answer the 3-pointer. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, who scored more, who scored less. Anything can happen in those 2 and those 3-pointers that can turn that game around like that. And it's a position you never want to put yourself in. Literally, once you get out of round 2, you're kind of putting it back in the hands of the Schmodown gods. And that's not a place you want to be in. What if we got 1950s, you know, movie release dates and then, you know, some other category for our 5? That like streaming movies for our 5, right? And then all of a sudden we blow our lead. It's really important to recognize that, like, just because you're ahead by 6 doesn't mean that you want to play round 3.
I'd like to add, Drew, that if it was a streaming movie 5-pointer at this point, I would trust you to answer them all.
I probably have seen it at this point.
Now, in the post-match interview, you were with your lovely friend Jessica, or as Jen Serger, as we all know her. But in that interview, you know, Andrew, you pretty much say, you know, play this match and going into the halls of fame and, you know, riding off into the sunset. But then you also said that you'd come back and manage Ben. As I understand it, Ben, you are part of the Den, whose manager is Kate. How is there an understanding there? How does that exactly work out? Or is that something that's still being worked out?
I mean, Kate has a lot of faith and trust in me as a player. When I signed there, the understanding was that I was going to do what was best for the Den. And I think, first of all, in this situation, me getting a loss in my first match with the Den on a crazy challenge of this 3-0 kid would have been a pretty bad look. So I think I think she should be thanking Drew. I don't know what she has or hasn't done, but
she's
thanked me.
Will.
There you go.
She's thanked me.
And then as far as my decision making of, you know, did I think I could handle it or, you know, another match, anything like that, as far as having a manager, I think there's just an understanding that I'll do what's best for the Den and manage my affairs. So I don't think there's any real conflict there. You'd have to ask Kate if, you know, how she feels about it.
Okay. And Andrew, I know you say this, you know, this was it, but is the book really closed on team action for you? Or is there perhaps a certain weird kind of scenario, kind of like what happened with Ben here in Radis, is the door even a little smidged cracked open? Just
well, maybe. I want to clarify that when I say ride off into the Halls of Fame, I'm just going back home. It's not like I'm going there for the first time. I've already been in the Halls of Fame since probably the third match I played. So when I say going back to the Halls of Fame, it just means I'm going to go back to my house, hang out for a while. Who knows what could happen? Why not? We TKO'd a team that thought they were hot. They thought they could trash talk. They thought they could hang with team action. Who knows? Who knows what else could happen? Winning feels good, and I like feeling good, Frank.
Well, that's great to hear.
I got a stat for you, Frank. Just before we move off that point, with this win, Team Action's all-time record moves to 7-4. It's an identical record to the record Who's the Boss had, title-contending team that lost. It's a much better record than Danger Zone had the last time we played a match at 4-3. 7-4 is not a bad record. Team Action was a pretty good team. And I think
we lost to Nerds Watch, which doesn't count because we didn't know what we were doing yet. Shire Wolves, Above the Line, and what was the other one?
Oh, those jackasses. Top 10.
Oh yeah, it's a top 10, 10 the first time.
Oh
the first
yeah,
time
I mean that would have been. We were so drunk and despondent during that match, it didn't even matter. All I knew was I was going to hit John Rocha whether we won or not.
Another iconic moment would happen at Spectacular 2 when you tackled Mr. Rocha over there. Ben, now yes. that you, I guess, met Raz's stipulation of finding a partner, now that you can, he's going to play you in a singles match. You know, I was curious about your thoughts about going up against Raz, because I look at that first round that you guys played. You know, he went perfect, you went perfect. Mm-hmm. Does that change your strategy or opinion on what kind of player Raddus is and the kind of player you will eventually, you know, face?
No, I think the thing about Raddus that's interesting is you can judge a player most of the time with little decisions they make. There's questions we're all going to get, right? There's questions that literally every player in the Schmodown is going to get, right? They're not going to hesitate. They're not going to make a funny comment. There's a few hard questions in most round ones that you're surprised if somebody gets. And then there's decisions players make in round two. And I've seen Raddus do some stuff in his first few matches I think is interesting, that I think is clever. I can tell the guy knows what he's doing. And if you have a player that can consistently play pretty well in round one, you know they're going to put a slice on the wheel in round two. And at that point, a three-round match just comes down to a five-point question. So I'm not going to underestimate this kid just because I think I'm a better player, which I definitely am. But I mean, I know what he's capable of doing. And I'm certainly going to go in expecting to get his best game, especially after getting completely embarrassed the way they just did.
He's got his tail between his legs, like a dog. There's just no way that he's going to be able to hang. I mean, after you get beaten in that fashion with all that thrown, it's not just losing. It's not like
can
we just
keep
went
doing
out
Tom
there.
Wilkinson's accent, please? Would you mind?
I should. Just I should. We didn't go out there and it was just like a silent movie and we just answered questions and one team won and one team didn't. He's supposed to be good at what we do and he wasn't. He got destroyed in the trivia and in the trash talk. So if I think he's going to come out and play Ben with me managing, I just think it's going to be a slaughter. I think it's going to be absolutely embarrassing, and I'm here for it.
All right, one last thing before I get you guys out of here.
I should manage. I feel like I'd be good at giving pep talks.
I'm fired up right now, I got to tell you. Before I get you out of here, as I said, I know there's probably a certain Action Army out there that was ecstatic to see this reunion on screen in a match. Any last words for the Action Army out there that has been supporting you guys for I don't know how long now, but you know, I think they've all a lot of people, including the Action Army, have wanted to see this reunion. Any last words out there for the fans and the Action Army?
I hope it lived up to what you guys missed. It certainly did for us, and we are so appreciative of the years and years of support. We have great memories of the early days of Take Three reacting and of seeing fan reactions of people that we ultimately never met. That great fan reaction to Late to the Party is one of my all-time favorites. The guy turned off the, I can't watch this. And the amount of just bile that used to come towards Team Action's way. And it makes me really happy that much like, you know, you either die the hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. I think that phrase is pretty accurate, you know, and sometimes you can go back to being the hero because people love villains. I think that's kind of what happened with us. So I'm really happy that people were excited to see us back, and I'm just glad that we won.
Yeah, everything we do is for the Army, man. Always has been. That was definitely in the back of our mind when we came out as Team Action. The music that David B brought up, I wish, it's going to sound a little creepy, but I wish I had a camera in every member of the Action Army's house so I could watch them watch that moment when the curtains open up with the music and Team Action is coming out for real, because Ben and I talked. We wanted to make sure more than anything we put on the best show we could for everyone in the Action Army, and I don't know what else you could ask for.
Moron, going back to having a camera in every...
Did you just call me a moron?
Well, you guys certainly delivered above and beyond, I think, anybody's expectations or hopes and dreams. So I want to thank you guys for taking the time joining us here on The Rundown. This was Team Action. Andrew Guy, Ben Bateman, thanks a lot, guys.
Salute.
Salute.
And we're back. Great job.
Yeah, we'll just leave it at that, won't we?
Great job.
Just leave it at that.
Yeah. Hey, man, before we get out of here, let's talk about the last thing that we saw in Friday Night Titans. We saw the conclusion of what the show opened with. We saw Roxy, leader of the Stars, hanging out with Mr. Irwin and Chundru, the Chosen. And then We see Jacoby and Nick Harley enter, and Nick starts to say, look, Roxy, we've been trying to get you. Didn't get my text. We've been trying to talk to you. We want to talk to you. Let's talk. We have something we want to talk to you about. Jacoby, talk to her. Right.
Then, Nick's like, Jacoby, go. Say what you want to say.
Jacoby's like, we don't like what this is becoming. We thought you were a good person. Right. That's what he said to Roxy. Roxy, you could see on her face. She was like, I thought I was a good person. And then so he kind of lays out his plea, and then he says, Roxy goes, look, sweetheart, or whatever she calls him, honey, whatever demeaning thing that she can say. Because you can say honey to where it'd be nice, but she says it in like a, listen, honey, like you stupid SOB. I told you before, don't trust anyone. And then you see Nick Harley start laughing and walk behind Roxy and next to her. Put the sunnies back on and say, Mr. Irwin wants you to leave his office. And Andrew say, yeah, what are you doing here? Can't you see we're busy studying?
We're studying. Get out of here. What are you doing here? We're studying.
Come on, bro.
What an IG nerd.
What are you thinking? We saw the return, essentially, of the spoiler Nick Harley because
he
spoiled the day. Of Jacoby Bancroft.
And so I go back and I watch that first scene with Nick and Jacoby. With this information now that Nick just leaves Jacoby in the dust, go watch that first scene again with this information.
Yes.
And I went back and watched it. I'm like, man, Nick knows exactly what's going on. And he's leading Jacoby down this path of he's embarrassing him. He's letting him walk right into the lion's den, basically, and just get mauled by Roxy. He does nothing to stop it. He does not care about Jacoby because Nick tells Jacoby in that first scene, oh look, like I'm gonna go talk to Roxy, right? And then we'll meet back here and it'll all be good. They never went back to that spot for Nick to be like, it's all good, Jacoby, I got your back. He never did that. He never did that. Instead, he goes, Jacoby, yeah, come here. Tell her what you told me. And he let him go out on a ledge and get shoved off into the ravine, into the Shonash Ravine, and just...
Shonash Ravine, yes.
And then Jacoby's like, what? And Nick's like, yeah, you should leave. And I mean, and Roxy's over there like, yeah... You should go now. And I'm like, I'm watching a cult. It's a cult.
Of personality.
Of something. That's what it is. A cult of.
I love a good betrayal.
It's, what did Jacoby do? What did Jacoby do to deserve that? What did Janine do to deserve that treatment from Roxy?
You know, nothing, man. And you know what, though? When I looked at the actions of Nick Harley, it reminded me a lot of the Best Actor Academy Award winner for this year's performance, Will Smith. You know,
in what?
because
a metaphorical slap, is that what you're saying?
No. Because Will Smith won for a movie called King Richard.
Sure.
And Jacoby was acting like a royal. I mean,
hey,
was acting like a royal dick.
I mean, hey, there you go.
I got it.
Yeah,
that's all we have for you this week. Rundown.
And Roxy. I mean, I don't know if you've watched the Hulu show The Dropout about Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos.
Oh, I'm aware of it though.
Like that whole company turned into like a cult of
crazy.
That was like beholden to like her idea, her vision. That was completely fraudulent. Right. I don't know if you've ever seen the Nexium documentary as well. I mean, like
I've seen.
This is what Roxy is going down this path with the stars and how she's recruited Chandru and Ethan Irwin, and now you got Nick, and it's just like, and she's over here just like, yeah, real soft tone spoken, so creepy and unnerving that she has fully bought into such a diluted view of what she's doing. It's really ridiculous is what it is. Jacoby didn't deserve any of this.
He didn't deserve any of it. You know what? We're going to pick up on all this next week because we need Steph, who knows Roxy Stryer better than anyone,
right,
to get in the studio where she lives and not in Ireland and be back here so we can talk about all the drama. But Frank Janish, look, you've said it all. You've said it all.
You know what I mean?
You've said it all. You're like a Machine Gun Kelly punk album. You make everyone go,
huh? What do you say?
So
what?
The people can follow you at FrankieJ29, of course. You can follow me on all social media at Brad Gilbert. I want to thank our guests, Action, Team Action, who joined us today. A shout out to our producer, PLD, and our missing member, Steph Sabra, for Frank Janish. Steph, my name is the Boat Brad Gilmore. This is the Schmodown Rundown, the only show that matters. We'll see you next week. That was an accident.
Well done. Well,
you get a king.
Oh, man, I had a burp.
Royal dick.
Yeah, I got it.
Thought of that in the moment.
You did, didn't you? You wily
Coyote.
Coyote, yeah, there you go.